better than a ceasefire. What are you looking for here?
An end. A real end, not a ceasefire. An end.
So something that would be permanent.
Yeah. Or giving up entirely. That's okay, too.
Are you close there? Are you possible? Is that possible in the next 24 hours?
Why not? Certainly possible. Give up. That's possible. Yeah.
So President Trump, very loud jet noise there because they're on Air Force One. He says he wants an end, not a ceasefire. He wants them to give up. Is that even in the cards? Is that something Iran would ever even possibly do? Our friend Jim Carafano joins us once again, senior counselor to the president and E.W. Richardson Fellow for International Engagement at the Heritage Foundation. Jim, so grateful to have you on with us today to talk about what's going on between Israel and Iran. I just want to open the floor to you. Tell us what we need to know.
Well, to answer your question, look, there's one of two outcomes here that are likely. One is, you know, the regime might collapse. I will say that every day it doesn't significantly decreases the likelihood that it will, right? Because authoritarian regimes are so brittle that even people that run them don't know how fragile they truly are. And and the only way you really know is it's the day when everybody runs through the streets and the soldiers don't shoot them, right? That's the day that it's all over. That's one option. Option two is the regime endures. If they endure, it's unlikely that they would come and make a public peace treaty, a deal like the Egyptians did. You know, because you have to remember, in this part of the world, weakness is seen as dishonorable, and it really kind of, it's a stigma almost. And so people, like, it doesn't mean people don't accept defeat, but they don't like to publicly acknowledge it because that makes them look weak, right? Mm-hmm. So the Iranians might just kind of go quiet, but the likelihood that they would do what Trump wants, which is publicly renounce their nuclear program, their support for terrorism, the surrogates, that seems a bit. To get a revolutionary regime to do that seems a bit beyond the pale. But honestly, you always have to listen to Donald Trump. He has aspirations and he has American interests. And when they come into conflict, American interests all the time, he would like the fighting to end. He would like to see peace. But he also has said that it's in America's interest that Iran not have a nuclear weapon and threaten its neighbors. And so if there's a choice between those two things, he is going to accept the Israelis destroying their nuclear weapon program and severely diminishing the regime.
We're speaking with Jim Carafano. So do I hear you saying that Donald Trump's America First policy might include participation with Israel to denuclearize Iran?
I don't know what that means, right? So we all know everybody knows the president rushed back. Now, we don't know what he rushed back for. Did he rush back to plan a U.S. strike on some very difficult facilities or to facilitate an Israeli strike? Or were they thinking the regime's going to collapse and they're going to prepare for that? We don't know which one of those it is, and it's just speculation at this point. But we all know that I think right now the president is concerned about protecting Americans, protecting Israel, and he's not going to do anything to impede making sure the Israelis do the maximum effort to eliminate as much of the Iranian infrastructure as possible. Beyond that, I don't know.
Jim Carafano speaking with us at this point in time about the heightened conflict in the Middle East. There's a part of me who feels like this is the tale as old as time. You know, there's conflict. Of course, to many of us, it seems almost biblical, if not biblical. Is there anything different right now about the circumstances of this conflict at this moment in time that makes this instance different?
Well, I mean, I can explain how we got here, and it's really, you know, quite obvious in retrospect. The most effective strategic deterrence. Because remember, the number one goal of the Iranian regime is to perpetuate the existence of the Iranian regime and the revolution. The most effective deterrent is what's called the offense-defense mix. It is the ability to punch the other guy in the nose, but then if he tries to punch you in the nose, to block him. That's the most stable strategic. Matter of fact, the most stable strategic environment is when both sides have an aggressive offense-defense mix. Well, the Iranians put all their money in offense. So one thing is the Israelis said, well, if you attack us, Israel, you know, we will unleash all of our friends on you. The Hamas, Hezbollah, Houthis, they'll all descend upon you if you attack us. And of course, they famously put a lot of money into their ballistic missiles. Well, what's unique, or why did this conflict happen now? Well, all the Israeli surrogates have been basically crushed, right? We crushed the Houthis, the Israelis flattened Hamas, they defeated Hezbollah. So they can't unleash the surrogates on Israel. That's not a threat because the surrogates have been sidelined. So then all they have is their missile threat. And we know that the Iranian missile threat, they have a lot of missiles, but they're not precision weapons. So they're not doing precise deep attack. They're not accurately targeting things. They're just firing a rain of things. Well, one is Israelis can block some of that. Two is now they have freedom to basically fly over the skies. And I think if you look at the numbers, Iran has gone through about half its missile force. So it has less than half its missiles left with a significantly decreased capability to use them. And of course, the Israelis have freedom to fly over the skies and continue to attrit the missiles and the forces. So the peak threat that the Iranians pose to Israel is gone. And of course, they just can't invade Israel because there's other countries in the middle. So it's these asymmetries that often lead to conflict. It's why when China says we're going to be ready to invade Taiwan by 2027, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to invade Taiwan by 2027, but they won't have the capacity capability to do that. And that's why the U.S. defense buildup is, well, yeah, by 2027, we're going to make sure that there's no way that you have the overwhelming advantage to do that. If you think at why did Russia attack Ukraine? Well, they thought they could wipe them off the map in an hour and a half. And, you know, it turned out that they couldn't. So we live in an age where powers are not big and strong enough to run parts of the world, but they're big and strong enough to hurt a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so we do live in an era when what I call conventional deterrence, which, by the way, makes nuclear deterrence more valuable. The smart guy puts a bet on that. And every nation should think about, can I defend my infrastructure? Can I defend my population centers? Can I protect my people from attack? And then if you could also have the capacity to threaten your enemy as well, then you're having a really good day.
Jim Carafano speaking with us right now about the conflict in the Middle East between Israel and Iran. In your assessment, is the American homeland in a position of heightened danger because of this conflict?
Well, I don't think from Iran. Iran has a pretty bad track record of doing hybrid warfare overseas. Even their cyber stuff's not really that good. And they've had a number of assassination plots and other things in the past that haven't been very successful. So if the Iranians pulled off some kind of hybrid attack or thing on the U.S. homeland, it would be very uncharacteristic because they don't normally have a good track record for that. Nobody's going to help the Iranians. Like, the Russians aren't going to come to their aid, China. So I'm not sure. I think there's a lot of reasons why there's heightened threats to the American homeland, probably not from Iran as a result of this conflict. And I will say, I think the prospect of this escalating into a wider conflict, you know, which you often hear, that is, I think, extremely low. I think there's almost no likelihood of that. And that's dramatically dropped from a couple of days ago when I thought it was not very likely.
Jim Carafano, I want to, before we let you go, I know that the Middle East, it looks like the State Department is going to brief here shortly, but I saw that you commented about the parade this weekend and the 250th birthday of the United States Army. I was able to go back and watch it after the fact, and just the history that was presented during that event. It was like a 3-hour event. It was pretty overwhelming, pretty amazing. And I just, it was controversial. Do you have a parade? Do you parade tanks down Washington, right, D.C.? Just wanted to get your thoughts on the event.
Well, look, as a guy who marched in a lot of parades and hated every one of them, it's very hard for me to say, oh my God, that was great. You know, because I can't think of anyone I enjoyed. But I will say, one is, what that was largely the world's most cost-effective recruiting commercial for the U.S. military. I mean, I thought anybody who thought about serving their country would watch that whole event and say, I want to be that guy. The difference is everybody can watch the Super Bowl and say, I want to be the quarterback of the Patriots, right? But, you know, and they can't, but they could also join the military. So I thought it was, it is a culminating moment. And this is the thing is we are not a 50-50 country. We are an 80-20 country. And what you saw in the streets of Washington, D.C. is what the 80 want. It is okay to be patriotic in America today, which honestly, even 2 years ago, I don't think you could say that. But we always say, well, it's 50-50 country. It's not. It's an 80-20 country. And 80% love this stuff, and when the 20% complain or argue or break something or throw a rock, it's, you know what? Tomorrow you're going to be 19%, mm-hmm. and then the next day 18.
Yeah, I think watching the American pride in our history and just absolute bravery was incredibly heartwarming. My grandfather served in World War II in the Army. And I thought of that when you saw that portion in the parade. I'm like, that's my grandpa out there. That was pretty touching for me personally. Well, Jim, we appreciate your service and your time that you spend with us all the time. I'm always thinking, when's the next time we can get Jim on? So we're grateful you had some time today.
Anytime, because Annie Fry's show is the best thing on the planet Earth. We all know that.
Planet Earth. Jim, thank you so much. Appreciate you. Senior Counselor to the President and E.W. Richardson Fellow for International Engagement at the Heritage Foundation. Like I said, he always has a way of approaching every situation with a sense of calm and collect. And I think that it's always great to have him here. He also is traveling the world all the time. So it's always good when we can get him on. All right, let's take a quick break. The YouTube live chat poll for today. Do you stand by Donald Trump's decision-making regarding the United States' involvement in Iran? Do you trust Donald Trump to make the right decision? You want to call in? You want to talk about it on the air? We'd love to have you. 314-241-9797. 314-241-9797. Are you worried Donald Trump's going to betray your vote for him? Do you think he hasn't attacked soon enough? Or are you just waiting for Donald Trump, in his wisdom, to do what he thinks is best? Give us a call. We'll do it next. 314-241-9797.